Welcome to Creative Innovators with Gigi Johnson. Yep, that's me. And I am excited to bring to you great people from all over the world who are making changes, breaking things, and remaking them around various creative industries. So bring us your great innovators and we'll bring them to you here in the Creative Innovators Podcast. Dmitry Vietsa thought about creating a new music technology leadership conference last year and shares with us how a fire right next to where he was going to have it made him rethink on a dime how to create a live conference. He has stepped up now with Music Tectonics and his other work to create entire virtual thought leadership areas remotely in our work-from-home environment. He works with lots of great music technology companies and shares how they are thinking about music live streaming, expanding new releases, and thinking about digital access. He shares other tidbits on companies that are doing intriguing things in our current listen from home era. Enjoy this conversation with Dmitry. Music Tectonics was last October.
Yes, October 2019.
And you had a fire in your backyard. So you were almost dealing with the ultimate physical challenge of a physical thought leadership event where you had to find a new hotel, move everything, move the food with less than 24 hours notice.
Given what's happened in 2020, I have not thought about that fire in weeks. It's been several weeks since I've thought about that. Luckily, we weren't actually in a fire, but because the fire broke out, a brush fire in the Los Angeles area broke out in the neighborhood where our event was set to happen. And we found out literally the day before. We were in LA doing our pre-conference on the other side of town, which was on purpose, and then found out about this fire. And we quickly had to realize that this fire wasn't going to be taken care of and put out by the time our event started in the the next day. So we were in our venue and our official hotel were both in the evacuation zones, and both of the venues were kind of like, well, you could probably come here, and we were like, I don't think that's the best idea. So we had to pivot quickly, and it worked out well. It was great. So I have nothing to complain about. I mean, we ended up feeling great, doing a great 400 plus person event without a hitch. You know, there was an exhibitor or two whose stuff didn't get across town in time. But the programming, the speakers, the attendees, lots of enthusiasm, great energy. There hadn't been anything like it in Los Angeles before. So I think the people were really excited about having something like that there, because there's such a pivotal kind of overlap between music, tech, gaming, content, TV, film, all in LA. And I think the music industry for a while was moving away from LA, now is all moving back.
In fact, there's several conferences that used to be much heftier for music in LA that left LA because LA doesn't tend to go to stuff, or at least that was the reputation. But we're almost now living through the digital fire again, so that folks like you who have a thought leadership community and event are suddenly going, crap, what we were doing live, which includes convening around music technology opportunities, people meeting each other, people working together, that suddenly the physical part went poof. And then you've needed and you've taken the opportunity to now launch weekly events, change your podcast out, and change. You have a whole company under this rock, paper, scissors, where you're now having to represent people into the digital wild. So you've been doing that, but now everything is 100% work from home, create from home. How has that changed what you do and what you've done with Music Tectonics?
I mean, we've stuck with what our mission is, which is to kind of like build a hub for this music technology community, which is really about forward thinkers, innovators who want to do new and interesting things in the music space. And we had an unofficial music tech meetup that had been planned to take place at South by Southwest. And our chief operating officer, Cheryl Woodhouse, said, so what? Let's do it anyway. And our manager of new business, Jade Preboy, actually ended up doing 4 events in a row immediately. So everybody all of a sudden realized this was getting canceled. The whole live music industry started to fall like dominoes. And Jade was organizing our first online meetups. We immediately pivoted that into what we call Weekly Wednesday, which is every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Eastern mini panel with a chance for people to actually interact, because that's part of what we really like out of these live events, conferences, and things like that, is the opportunity to actually meet people, see people face to face. And so we really wanted to make that happen in how we pivoted with what was going on in the world.
So we're going to talk about the ways that music innovation and technology has been changing. But let me stick with the question of how do people actually, we're recording this in June of 2020. We're a few months into the hyper-zoomization of living with your face-to-face and close-up showing your apartment, home, home office, or unmade bed, that we've gotten this whole getting used to being face-to-face, but we're also talking to these boxes with someone's name on it. How do you... And I know some ways you've been doing it, but how do you get people to actually communicate and collaborate in this hyper-personal, impersonal set of platforms?
I mean, I think it actually starts with curation, the decisions that you make about what the topics are, how you're framing the topics, what the questions are, and who you're choosing to talk. There are lots of people who are used to being on panels who actually aren't that good at it. And they're used to a lot of name dropping. They're used to a lot of kind of like high level stuff that sort of is already common knowledge. And so the good thing about being focused on innovation is you get to mix in the big time players with some free thinkers. And as a result, you can kind of push the conversation forward more. So start with really good curation. Start with thinking about, well, what are the types of topics and voices that you want to put out there? And then what are the types of questions you want to ask them? And are they going to be willing? And find out in advance, are they going to be willing to go there with you? Or are they going to be monitored by their PR person and really only be able to say the same stuff that gets released in press releases? So really what you do there is you end up, if that's all you get, you end up attracting people who are basically looking for work or looking for partnerships. And they're really just there because they want to connect with that person. So then the next part becomes really important, which is how do you actually allow people to connect? How do you allow relationships, friendships, professional networking, and business to be conducted between those folks? It's really hard to do with Zoom. Obviously, a lot of the traditional industry events that do Zoom or other webinars really are focused on the webinar. It's a one-to-many presentation, which is the old model. It's the same thing that's changed entirely in all forms of media, including video gaming and music and so forth, where it's no longer about one creative person or one smart person talking to everybody else. So what we've been trying to do is push Zoom to its limits of letting people interact with each other. So we do a panel that's one to many. We do the Q&A right in the chat. So even if we don't get to the answers on camera, we're still getting to some of the users answering, you know, the community answering each other. And then the third thing is we leave a lot of time, not only for Q&A, but also for actual networking, where anybody who's in the room, because we've already verified everybody. Well, you were there, I think, on our first Wednesday.
You taught me so much about what not...
What not to let happen.
Not let people change their names in Zoom.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that was part of the torching of the event.
Right, yeah. So we learned quickly about Zoom bombers. I haven't heard as much about them as much, but we now require verification with LinkedIn URLs to verify somebody really is. And if they don't have a company URL that we recognize, then we actually have to... We force them to message us through their LinkedIn account so we know they really are who they are. And that's helped tremendously. But once we got past that piece... And ever since then, we always let as many people as want to introduce themselves on camera to do so. We also encourage everyone to post their email, their LinkedIn, their URLs, their socials in the chat as well. And then we share the chats. We've actually just released the Music Tectonics app early summer 2020. And so we actually have an app where we're posting the chats, we're posting the video. It's a community app. So it's kind of like a vanilla white label Facebook, but just for the music technology community. So we're also driving people to go find their additional content like the transcripts, the chat transcripts there.
So speaking of tech, then what tech did you choose for your app?
We're using something called Disciple, which actually came out of a music company. Although that's not why we chose it. We chose it just because it had the features that we wanted, but it's totally white label. So we've already changed the URL to app.musictectonics.com, and we are getting approval in both the iOS and Android stores. So we will actually have native mobile apps in both cases, which will mirror what happens on the web app as well.
Excellent.
And so nobody will know it's Disciple after once that all happens.
So it's always good to promote the folks that you have as your vendors who you enjoy.
Well, I pay a pretty penny for it, so I'm hoping they'll promote us at some point.
Excellent. Well, so part of it is, though, a lot of people are looking for new tools to collaborate in. So you've had some that have been around for a while, and I think some of the story of this technology change is, in terms of innovation in music, is some people were standing there with tools going, why does no one come? And suddenly people are there after sitting around for so long. But other folks, it's like, well, they had this in their back pocket. It was working for their company. Now they see other people have that need, and they're scrambling to bring out or enhance new tools. Mm-hmm. So that's, to me, some of the story of all this. But I'm here to hear your story about all of this. So you have been then able to be kind of, I won't say Switzerland, because that implies neutrality. You've been a booster for folks who are looking at enhancing what they're doing with technology and this shift to work from home, create from home, communicate from home.
Yeah, one of the reasons we started Music Tectonics, you know, my daily gig is Rock, Paper, Scissors, which, as you know, is a music tech PR firm. We do, publicity, press relations for a lot of different music technology companies. But we actually wanted to start Music Tectonics to give it a little bit of a Switzerland feel and to always try to balance not just promoting the companies that we work with, but the entire kind of what we call the macro system of everybody that's in that space. And one other piece of that, as I mentioned before, is both the startup innovator side and some of the companies that are already well established and really trying to build a bridge there. So in that sense, we do have to play kind of a neutral role.
And you also had done that at South by Southwest for a while, that you had created meetups that were letting people find each other. And in many ways, that's been a bit of a, I shouldn't say a gap, because you've had other regional approaches, but you're trying to create kind of a broader space.
Yeah, we definitely were aiming for something that was national, that could be multi-city, could be international as well, and trying to not just focus, because I've noticed I didn't want to like compete with other existing events and so forth that are already out there. Some of them lean heavily on the innovation side. Some of them lean heavily on a regional base, and some of them are very like music industry, major label, indie label, publishers, sync, all those things already existed. So we were thinking, well, you know what? Let's try to put it all together in a and as balanced a way as possible.
You are working from home, yes?
Yes, my team of 17 are all working from home within a couple of miles of each other.
And you are in the hotbed of music.
You mean location-wise? We're in Bloomington, Indiana, which is midway between Nashville and Chicago. So though our conference is in LA and none of our clients are in Bloomington, this is where we found an amazing overpopulation of extremely smart, highly educated people who are interested in both music and innovation.
And to me, that's one of the interesting times right now of music innovation, is that you can do things from anywhere to create a new company, a new business, a new tech. And now you can really create together and connect up, because so many people are thinking of things and working from their homes. What are you seeing then as to what people are doing, and where is music innovation now coming from in this pandemic era?
Well, I mean, I think you touched on it earlier in the conversation. We are seeing how are people reacting to self-isolation, lockdown, not being able to perform, all those types of things, remote work. We're seeing a lot of interesting things happen. The first one, of course, is on live streaming, where live streaming I've thought of as a bit of a stepchild of the music industry, because people were perfectly happy going to actual shows. And live streaming does one thing to create access, which could be both in terms of geographic location, it could be in terms of price, it could be even something like having disabilities or not liking smoke or alcohol or any of those things. It creates access, but a lot of the stuff that people wanted from concerts had more to do with who they were, their identity, meeting people in person, dancing, falling in love, getting intoxicated. All of those things go together with how people experience concerts traditionally. And so live streaming never really took off. It felt like it was a very poor facsimile of the real experience. But now that we're in lockdown, people, I think, are realizing that, A, there's nothing else to do. If you're a performer, you have to figure out something, right? And B, that it's not the same thing, but it is a way to perform. And so it's like any artistic endeavor where your mentor, your teacher, or even your mind, you decide to put limitations on yourself as a way of expressing another aspect of creativity to say, all right, what if I work within these limitations? How far can I push creativity here? And so I think as a result, people are getting really creative with it. And, you know, there's live streaming platforms. You kind of hinted at this earlier. There are live streaming platforms that have existed for, you know, a decade, but they never really saw traction. All of a sudden, they're starting to take off. Or people that are in parallel universe in terms of what their value proposition is, what their company offers, or what they're trying to do for the world is right next door. And they're like, oh, let's turn this into live streaming. So you're seeing that come, you know, to turn into a lot of opportunity for innovation. So some interesting things have come out as a variety. As a result of that, and one of them is the variety of ways in which to monetize that, which we could get into. One of them is the reemergence of kind of a conversation that was existing in digital music, you know, 5 and 10 years ago about ubiquity versus obscurity, and how you approach live streaming as a result. And that, to me, that conversation came up when social media first started getting big, when streaming services started getting big, and we can talk about that. And then the other thing is just habits, you know, like, will these habits stay? I think there are new habits being formed right now. I don't think, once it's safe to go out, I don't think concerts are over. I don't think people are like, oh yeah, live streaming is so much better than going to a festival or a bar or a club or a theater. But I do think people might say, now, in the future, well, I was going to go to this show, but it's really too far away, so I think I'll live stream it. Or, well, there's no shows that I want to go to this weekend, but there is this cool thing happening on Fortnite, and I think I'll just dive into it that way, and I'll engage in music in that way, too. So I think there are habits that are being formed right now that will change what happens. It won't be a 100% shift from real concerts to live streaming, but it will be a shift that stays with people past this.
Well, it also opens an opportunity for a different type of windowing so that, you know, it's almost like we've assumed that we've got scarcity of a live concert and then we have a stream that, of course, you can't really hold back and it's going to be coming at you no matter what. And if not, it'll be pirated. And now there's the opportunity to kind of provide other VIP delivery, create artificial scarcity through a live stream, you know, something that, yeah, you probably can screen capture it if you know what you're doing, which is a lot of people. But then there's the, you know, the opportunity to have a custom delivery without having to go on the road. So what type of companies are you finding that are kind of slicing that pie in different ways?
Yeah, so we did a mini series on the Music Tectonics podcast. We usually issue things once a week on Tuesdays, but right when this hit, I really wanted to dive into live streaming and remote collaboration. So we did like back-to-back interviews like every day of the week. And so we ended up with several in a row. So for live streaming, we interviewed YouNow, which is a platform that some people would kind of say is similar to Twitch, but it's smaller. It's got its own flavor. And it's each of these platforms has its own kind of set of rituals and etiquette and ways to monetize, ways to engage, and ways to build audiences. YouNow, we also had Emma McGann, who's an artist that's been on YouNow for quite a while, talk about what her strategies are there. And she really helped me see how within a platform, it's kind of like a social media platform where you have to get to know how it works. Don't think of this as a stage that you're getting on, but you actually have to understand how people are engaging, how creators and performers are collaborating across from each other, and what the features of a given platform are that make that performance unique on that platform. So for example, on YouNow, now, obviously, there's this ability to tip through the use of these type of emojis and animations and things like that. And so she integrates into her performances, as any successful You Now and Twitch musicians do, of calling out performers when they tip or when they engage, when they show up and so forth from stage. They can use the chat to ask for song requests, to make requests. On You Now, you can even bring a couple of your audience members, quote, on stage so that you can have like a little dialogue. So you start to get a little bit of that like VIP experience right there within the performance. But we also talked to a newer platform called Topeka, which is at topeka.live, where they actually bring more of a VIP experience where it's almost like you find artists that you like and you can actually have them do a house concert just for your family via Zoom. Or you can have them serenade your partner for their birthday or anniversary. Or you can set up a chat for somebody's birthday where you say, hey, would you like to talk about guitars with my partner because they're really into the same kind of guitar that you play. And so there are those kind of VIP things as well. And then there's companies like Stage It, which has been around since 2009, pretty much had decided to bring the oars in for quite a while. And all of a sudden, they had grossed something like $500,000 in 2019. But in the first 3 weeks of COVID lockdown, they had already seen $850,000 roll in gross. So, you have all sorts of different platforms, and each of them's a little different. You know, a company that we work with is Bands in Town, which is not a live streaming platform. It's a concert discovery platform, but they quickly adapted to help all the artists who are having to pivot to live stream to help them discover live streams. They did that by starting their own Twitch channel and using that as a way to focus on up-and-coming artists and help them get audience. But then they also added a watch live. So now you can get notifications either via their app or email when a band that you like is planning to do a live stream concert. You can find out about it just with a notification. So there's a wide variety of stuff happening there.
One thing that's been interesting is that people now have flexible time to be able to speak to each other and connect. And it seems like that's been an accidental benefit for what's been going on, is you've been able to bring voices together that may have been tangled up in travel or projects, and now they've got time to actually
talk. A really good point, Gigi. I think that people are frequently too busy. There's too much going on, and all of us feel pretty busy during this, at least those of us who are in the working world as opposed to maybe the education world. I don't know how it is in terms of students. They may feel like they're going crazy because they have so much free time, but in work...
they don't have so much free time.
That's good.
That is not what's happening. It's almost the opposite.
Yeah, so I think everyone's having that, right? It's like you get this, your schedule changes and there's no excuses not to do more, and you end up doing more as a result. And so that's definitely what I'm seeing. But you know, I used to use this kind of hack for business networking in the music industry, which is show up in a city and say, I'm here for 2 days, can you meet with me? That worked so much better than just being in the same city as somebody all the time, because it's like, yeah, sure, I'll see you at some point. But just showing up. And now with the Zoom world for music industry networking and so forth, you actually do increase access. There's less excuse. There's less commute time. And people are more open to connecting. Now, we may be coming on the tail end of that. By the time this podcast airs, maybe nobody ever wants to do a Zoom ever again. But I think there is something there about there's kind of a leveling of the playing field that's happening as a result of everybody being at remote work all of a sudden. There's no more front door to go through. Everybody has the same internet. Well, not everybody. I shouldn't say everybody, because not everybody has the same internet access. But there is certainly a little bit of a leveling there, I think.
But yes and no. So I would contest. We were talking before we started the podcast itself that this is actually a really good and awful time for that. So if you are not in a community or in a socioeconomic where you have access to technology and don't necessarily know, I mean, part of it, there's almost a clutter of stuff. I think in the past few weeks, I could have readily gone to about 5 digital conferences a week going on.
True.
Some at the same time. I'm speaking at some of them. But how would you know? It's almost like the algorithms are helping push to you what's available. So if you're not in the human ecosystem to know about Music Tectonics or about the Amplify Music conference that you helped us with back in April, that if you didn't know it was happening and weren't in the in-group or in the connected group. I mean, I keep talking to my own students about this, is they can walk into umpteen conferences and conversations now, but how would they know about them? And I do think that this is a grand time if you've got microphones at home and a computer at home and have the economic freedom to go to stuff and have a decent web connection. But if you don't, it's almost like the world is happening without you and you're not going to be able to get into that space. Are you seeing changes in the actual innovating side that are being accelerated by all these people being connected? Or what are you seeing as to kind of the pre-launch stage of sort of the creation side of tools and community?
I'm going to push back a little bit because I agree that you absolutely cannot assume that everybody has the same access, right? You might not have a good enough computer. You might not have good enough internet. You might not have enough privacy to actually do a business type
event
and so forth. All of those things are totally legitimate. But, you know, we're working, Music Tectonics is working in a B2B space, business to business, music and technology, networking, knowledge sharing, and so forth. And what I'm seeing, I think, is more diversification of who's attending our online events. I think both in terms of parts of the country, international, and probably there's some socioeconomic stuff there as well that, you know, I don't know. I can't assume one way or the other, but my hunch is because of the diversity that we're seeing, I mean, we have people joining from India, Africa, from all over the place. And as a result, it makes me think, even though you may or may not know, right, there's an in-group or an out-group or whatever in terms of getting access to the events, if you find out about them, it's automatically just as cheap for them to attend, almost, relatively, as somebody in the United States versus spending $2,000 on a plane versus $2,000 on hotels. So all of a sudden you're like, well, will I go to an event like Music Tectonics in LA that'll cost me $5,000 by the time you all said and done, or will I spend, you know, $75 on an online event? I mean, it's day and night, right?
Absolutely. And that's where I find this all really interesting. My travel budget is now not spent this year.
Right.
Because I didn't go to South By. I haven't gone to four other conferences in the meantime. I wasn't supposed to be home right now. So to me, that's really interesting in terms of lack of having to spend to get in the game as to meeting people. I might not, though, have the access to other people's money for stuff, and that could be a longer conversation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I do find the real interesting change, and I'll talk about this in a second in a related space, is we now have some instant globalization. Mm-hmm. So whether it's the fact that I might be a local artist that you may not know of in another country, and suddenly someone can come to a streaming concert and discover you. But I'm finding in the music education space, which has a lot of innovation around it, there are people who had local businesses who've now gone global. And the barriers that are geography, in some cases, have gone foot and gone away. So if I might have had a proprietary space in my community to bring a unique technology of music to my local community, I now have had to suddenly put it online. And I'm finding so many companies that are in that space who are suddenly going, I have a global audience. I have an instant I had no idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's what we're talking about in terms of this remote work kind of leveling the playing field a bit, because all of a sudden everybody has access to everybody. And, you know, whereas before it's like, oh, am I going to do a Zoom call? Are we going to deal with these time zone changes to do this demo to find out about this app or this platform? And now it's like, well, that's what everyone's doing. So, you know, there's no resistance to setting up those video calls with people. And going back to what you were saying about, other ways in which the field is being leveled or not, I feel like even before COVID hit, we were seeing a filling in of the music tech market. You're seeing more startups who, just because of the evolution and the maturation of certain tools, everything from developing languages to platforms that allow you to build platforms on top of platforms, you're seeing more kind of innovative, smaller startups emerging to the point where they can actually go to market. And they're not just little features, but they're full-on concepts. And they're Now, the ones that are interacting with the types of creativity that's kind of exploding as everybody has more free time or me time are really interesting. There's a whole new interest in creator tools, tools for people who make music, video, and other types of, quote, content. I know people sometimes hate these terms, creator and content and so forth, but they're a little bit more generic because it's not just happening in music. And so you're seeing tools that are addressing issues like monetization, production, remote collaboration, analytics, all those types of things that are specifically for kind of a diversity of creators and some people who may not have been able to actually make music with more traditional tools, or I shouldn't say wouldn't able to, but maybe weren't drawn to, or for whatever reason, their particular skill set didn't really match with what tools are available. All of a sudden, they're getting new tools available. There's the ability with companies like AudioBridge, which is like having a multi-track recorder on your phone, or SoundStorming, which is like a social media music app, like if Instagram was meant for music, where you can get ideas and brainstorm and collaborate with other artists, things like that. So there are, I think, these tools that are emerging that you know, in the past would have had to come from much bigger companies. They would have come from Silicon Valley or New York City, major cities, and now you're starting to see them emerge from other parts of the country and the world.
And in some ways, that it's almost a different level of specialist somewhere in between. I've been seeing this a lot where people are expecting, well, I'm pretty smart, I should be able to figure this tool out and suddenly be able to produce my professional level content. I think some people are saying, oh crap, there is sophistication to this and it is over my head. And I'm finding some of my students, for example, are getting hired in to actually be that professional live stream videographer, coordinator, right, cleanup person. So the level of tools have come to the average creator can use some of them, but the people are now beginning to dig into the, how in the world do I clean up my audio from a live stream? How do I understand what I can do with the limitations of what I have, or make everything sound, you know, we're talking about remote creation. How do we create together? And that it's not just I push a button and suddenly everything's fabulous. But a lot of sort of sophisticated tools in between, and people who are now coming out and bringing their audio engineering skills to more diverse populations.
Absolutely. And it's interesting to see what's happening right now, but I think it's also going to be interesting to see what happens in the coming weeks and months as a result of those factors that you're talking about. I mean, even people, you know, even the types of actions and shifts you're seeing on things like TikTok, which was exploding before the lockdown, but then all of a sudden you see this family version of TikTok because everybody's stuck at home together. And start to see, like, people are actually now treating that as a marketing platform. How do you get a TikTok dance? You know, like, what I'm on an artist manager's forum on a social media platform, and there are people who are talking about, so how do you collaborate with dancer influencers on TikTok to get your music to get some more traction? And you have companies like Chartmetrics that now released a new chart for analytics around on TikTok and so forth. So there's a lot of creativity happening that I don't know that we'll see fully emerge right away. Although I will tell you, there are more releases for indie artists coming out right now. You know, CD Baby's one of our clients, their distribution company for independent artists, and they're seeing a huge uptake, an unbelievable uptick in terms of how much stuff is getting released right now. Maybe they saw that a lot of the traditional artists were not releasing stuff because their tours got canceled. Maybe they themselves had tours that were canceled, and they were just like, well, there's no point in waiting until the fall because there's no tour then either, so let's just get the stuff out there. So there, you are seeing an uptick in that aspect of creativity as well.
Dimitri, it's been great having you on the show. We could possibly talk forever, but I would love to have you back on the show in a few months as to where we've gotten to, if I can get you to join us again.
Hey, it's always great to talk with you, Gigi. You know, we love collaborating on these things. And, you know, when we could see each other in person, we were hanging out at South by Southwest or other
Absolutely.
Events.
Absolutely, or NAMM or other stuff. Yeah.
Your Amplify music event was awesome. And I've appreciated seeing you at the weekly Wednesdays. So always glad to do it. I'll be glad to come back.
So where can people, you've mentioned several things, best place to find your stuff is to go to Music Tectonics as a starting point, or where should people dig in?
We are a two-headed monster, so musictectonics.com is where you'll find our podcast, our conference, our online events, our app, and so forth, app.musictectonics.com if you want to join that community, and then rockpaperscissors.biz, B-I-Z, that's the music tech PR firm that I run.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for listening. One update since this episode was recorded back in June is that Music Tectonics will be having a virtual conference in October. So head over to musictectonics.com to check out tickets and availability and interesting speakers that Dimitri's put together with his team for that great virtual conference that you can go to from anywhere in the world. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Please subscribe in your favorite podcast player and invite three friends. Let them know this new podcast has come out the door. We're going to be having episodes dropping every Tuesday, so please join us. Do subscribe and come to creativeinnovatorspodcast.com to nominate speakers you would love to hear and guests you would love to hear on the show, whether you know them or not. Thanks again, and see you at the next episode.